Hello, everyone, and welcome to Module 5 of Advanced Aromatherapy, Therapeutic Application of Essential Oils for Clarity, Health, and Happiness with David Crow, titled Aromatherapy for the Respiratory System, Part 2. This is your host, Colleen, at the Shift Network. A couple reminders. If you have any technical issue or question during the call on Maestro, you can press 5 on your keypad and I will come along and assist you. And if you are in the webcast, or on it, I mean, please type the message directly into the box and be sure to include your email address so we can reply. And that covers it for today. So let's bring on David. A big welcome for you, David, from all of us.
Thank you, Colleen, and welcome back to everybody around the world. So we will take a few minutes, as we always do at the beginning, to discuss any questions or comments, feedback, wonderful testimonials that you might have. And since it takes a few minutes for a comment to come in on the webcast, I'll just go ahead and open it up. And as usual, I will call on Colleen in just a few minutes to see if anybody has called in. So for everybody else, if you don't have any particular questions, concerns, or wonderful testimonials, let's go ahead and open up all of the files that are relevant for today. And so if you are looking at the course page, please move the cursor to the link for Module 5. Click on that, and you will see several new files. And you can go ahead and open that. A series of files there, antimicrobial powers of essential oils. This is some further information for your reading pleasure. Essential oil research. This is a lot of reading material that's very dense and probably quite uninteresting for most of you, but it's very interesting to me personally, and it reveals quite a lot about essential oils. So I always like to share some of the modern scientific research. It will be part of almost every class, and we'll discuss the meaning of it in a little bit. Then you will see that there is a file on the webcast questions from session 4. And I'll just remind everybody that if you submit questions on the webcast and we do not get around to discussing them on the call, this is where you will find the answers. I always answer every question. And so if you open this file, you will see that every question that wasn't answered is now answered. Then you will see a file for deepening practices. So these are the ones for today. And now, if you would please move the cursor to Module 4 link. We're going to go back. And there's just a couple of files that we need to open that we're going to conclude, since 4 and 5 go together. So please open the file titled Monographs for Modules 4 and 5. Okay, Monographs for Modules 4 and 5. And also, please open the file titled Protocols for Withdrawals. Protocols for Withdrawals. And so we have two old files from last week, the monographs and the protocols, and then all the others are for this week. So if you would open those up, that would be great. And while we are waiting for any new comments to come in on the webcast, or if anybody would like to call in, I'll just give you a couple more minor details. I mentioned last week that we are offering a tester kit over at Floracopia, and since we are going to be getting into a lot of recipes today, how to make specific formulas, this might be something that interests you. And so you can find that easily on the Floracopia site, and don't forget that you get 20% off everything using the discount code of Aromatherapy20. And you can plug that in at the link at the bottom of the course page. I will also mention that a lot of people have been sending a lot of very interesting stories, testimonials, and challenging health concerns to the consulting email, and I would like to thank everybody for using that, and it's a very good way to answer more in-depth questions that we don't have time for in the class. But I also want to mention that I'm a little behind, and it's partly because I'm currently teaching two advanced courses for the Shift Network back-to-back. And so the consulting email box is quite full, and normally I manage to stay on top of it, usually about a week or so turnaround time. But this week, Sarah and I are in Manhattan, and we are teaching at the New York Open Center, and guess what we are teaching? We're teaching about essential oils and flower essences. And one of our specialties will be, especially tomorrow and on the weekend, I will be talking about essential oils for respiratory health, since I seem to have suddenly started developing a cough here while I'm talking. So if any of you are in the neighborhood and want to drop by, we have a good collection of essential oils to sample directly. That, of course, is one of the challenges with doing this remotely all over the world. But I know that many people are receiving their tester kits and enjoying them once you are able to pry off the nicely, tightly sealed lids. So I hope that you have figured out how to do that. That is the advantage of those tester bottles, is that the lids will not come off in shipping. And that is also the disadvantage. One other thing that I wanted to mention here is that as we go along, some people will start to want to know specific information about treating symptoms. And the way that we have organized the class material is to obviously present a lot of material in a very short period of time. And so if you are looking for the specific treatment of specific conditions, and of course that's what today is mostly about, specific recipes and so forth, my suggestion is go to one of the monograph pages. And in a monograph page, you can do a search for a specific keyword. And it depends on the file, type of file that it is, and it depends on type of computer that it is, but it's usually quite simple. It's usually something like on a Mac, it's Command plus F key together while you have that file open. And sometimes you can just see the search box open in, say, the upper right-hand corner of a Word document, and all you have to do is type in the word you're looking for. So say you're looking for something that is specific for treating flus. Well, all you have to do is open one of the files that has the monographs of several essential oils on it and type in the word flu in the search box. And then it will just scroll down one at a time. Every time you push the enter button, it will go to the next place where the word flu is. And so sometimes it will just be the word flu, and there it is. Sometimes it will be maybe fluid, okay? Well, you don't want that, but you just want the word flu. And so that way you can scroll through each of those monograph files, each of the pharmacopoeia files, and that way the pharmacopoeia file becomes a searchable database for specific symptoms that you are looking for. Okay, I hope that's a helpful short introduction. And with that, Colleen, I will turn it back to you and see if anybody has any comments or wonderful testimonials, if anybody would like to call in or if anybody is saying anything on the webcast.
Thank you so much, David. I wanted to let everyone know, if you're on the phone, please press 1 if you'd like to share with all of us so that we'll see that you'd like that. And David, we have a sharing from Marcy. This past week, my youngest son, who is 10, came down with a cold. I was able to try out the essential oils. It seemed to work quite well. I used the breath blend from Floracopia. Even though he still has the cold, the symptoms are mild, and it has helped with the congestion and coughing. I unfortunately have succumbed to the cold myself, so I'm keeping the diffuser going. And of course, I drink my Tulsi tea. My symptoms are manageable, so that is a good thing. My question is this. With so many oils to choose from, how do you decide which ones to keep in your home pharmacy?
Well, that's an excellent testimonial. I'm sorry to hear that you got the bug, but glad to hear that it's working for your child. And in general, one of the things we're going to talk about today is the use of essential oils for boosting our immune system, which is important, and specifically respiratory immunity. And then we have a lot of very specific details about treatment of all kinds of respiratory conditions. So the answer to your question about which one, that's really a very personal decision. As we go through this course, you will hear that there are certain oils that are going to come up over and over and over in all kinds of different modules. That would be a good clue. Which oils tend to be used the most in different kinds of settings? And so obviously, you've already heard about eucalyptus oil several times, and that's a good place to start. You're going to hear about lavender oil a good, many, many times. So that's one system that can help to decide. And every time we get into a new module, you're also going to get a file on the primary herbs, the primary oils that are related to that particular module. So last week, there was a file that gave a fairly extensive list of a lot of oils that are really very important for respiratory conditions. That's another way to approach it. If you have a specific condition that you would like to focus on with a bit more emphasis on a group of oils, that would also be how you would like to do it. Look at the file of the oils that are specifically related more directly to that particular module and that particular concern. Then, the other way to do it is to simply gather a few oils at a time and see which ones you just fall in love with. And many times those are the ones that you would like to be using on a general basis more frequently. And also keep in mind that as we go through the modules, that you'll hear about certain kinds of blends and certain kinds of formulas and specific oils that are good for something that maybe don't appeal to you so much at the olfactory level, but they're really important and you should have them. So that's the counterpart in aromatherapy of taking an herb that doesn't taste good. And so some people are not particularly fond of the fragrance of tea tree oil, but tea tree oil is a very important oil to have in the home because in the diffuser it's very, very good for increasing the potency of respiratory blends, as we will learn tonight. So that would be the short answer. So thank you for asking. And Colleen, I'll turn it back to you, see if anybody has called in.
And I'm just looking at that, and so far there are no participants that have called in.
Okay, well, we have another minute if we want to do another webcast question.
Okay. What are the best oils? This is from John. What are the best oils to restore and correct the underlying humoral terrain, specifically congested, I think it's meant to be mucous membranes or mucous membranes?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, excellent question, John. And thank you for asking. That's actually why we're here today, is to talk about that as a very fundamental concept. So I will answer your question in the next few minutes as we go through the module itself. So I'll just go ahead and with that.
We do have one, if I can just interrupt. Someone just did put up their hand. If we could take that, then
oh,
it's
sure.
Fit.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes, of course.
All right, here we go for Nancy. Go ahead, you have the mic, Nancy.
Hi. I've had a business for many years, and I haven't heard anyone mention this either on, I watched the Facebook or in any of the choice of oils, but in looking at price. So someone had mentioned on Facebook that they burnt their hand. I burnt my hand too last week. I would go with lavender, although someone said they would go with Immortal. But the lavender, price-wise, is it makes more sense to me. So I'm always looking at it in that way too. Do you have anything to say about that?
I'm sorry. So basically you're asking if it's okay to look at the essential oils both from the therapeutic applications as well as from the price.
Yeah, and if a less expensive essential oil will do the trick, I would do that.
Yeah,
I would use that. Because there are a lot of very, very expensive oils.
Yes, there are. And this is a quality control issue as well, because a lot of times cheaper oils are compromised, and cheaper oils may not give you the therapeutic benefits that you want.
No, I'm not talking about cheap. I'm not talking about cheap oils. I'm talking about types of oil. So, if you
Right.
If you had a choice between an exotic oil and an oil that was more affordable.
Right, exactly. I'm just pointing out that if for a lot of people, let's remember that price is really the determining factor when they go shopping, and that can be very problematic in the world of aromatherapy. But let's just say you have the choice between a high-quality true lavender and a high-quality true helichrysum. The answer is yes. It is perfectly acceptable to use the lower-cost, high-quality lavender as opposed to using something exotic. Okay, and there are many examples of this, both in aromatherapy and in the world of herbal medicine, and that is that sometimes the more exotic thing is not even necessary. We see this a lot with things that, from Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine, you know, rare alchemical preparations, all kinds of, you know, harder to find herbs that cost a fortune and things like that. And in a lot of cases, there's perfectly acceptable substitutes that do even better that might even just be weeds in our backyard. So, yes, the answer is yes. If you have two choices and you know that the quality is good, then you can certainly go with the lower cost. But one of the things that is important specifically about treating burns that I want to mention here is that even though both lavender and helichrysum have very remarkable healing powers for treating burns and for treating other kinds of skin conditions of an inflammatory nature, that sometimes essential oils are really not the best choice anyway. And we don't really know. That's one of the things I'm going to open up this module with is what can we expect from essential oils? And I've touched on this, but I'm going to unpack it a little bit more here. And sometimes with inflammation, essential oils are really not the best. Sometimes with inflammation, what is actually best are the anti-inflammatories and the moistening agents. And so we have touched briefly on how essential oils tend to be a bit drying in general. And they're extremely concentrated. And so for some people, the use of essential oils directly on the skin, undiluted, for a burn, lavender or helichrysum, can be miraculous. I've heard many stories that it can have miraculous effects for serious burns, you know, incredible testimonials, actually. But on the other hand, if somebody has skin sensitivity, essential oils may not actually work the best and could actually aggravate it. And so something like fresh aloe vera gel scooped out of the leaf, okay, you can just get some pleasant body sensations just thinking about applying that, okay? Or something like a salve that has marshmallow in it and more moistening, demulcent types of things. These kinds of things are also a base, actually, for putting essential oils in that kind of take out some of that dry, highly concentrated nature. And we will talk about that. We do have a module on skincare, and this is the place where we can really look at this in more detail. But those will be the two answers to an excellent question. One is yes, you can, you do, you, Yes, you can use substitutes for more expensive exotic oils. And number two, sometimes essential oils are not even the best treatment. So I hope that is helpful. Okay, let's start our module. Now, we're going to get into a lot of specific details about treatments of colds and flus and sinusitis and bronchitis and asthma and allergies and so forth. And I have already set the stage last week by giving you a lot of historical background and a lot of discussion about the antimicrobial powers. And I mentioned last week that aromatherapy is an aspect of herbal medicine, and it is unique. And because of the concentrated nature of the essential oils, that there are some things that essential oils and aromatherapy are really good for, and some things that it is not really the best treatment for. And this is a very important thing to understand as we go along, because I do not want to continue the misunderstanding about essential oils that they will cure everything, because they will not. And I don't want to continue the misunderstanding that they are the best thing for every condition either, because they're not. And so if you work in a holistic natural medicine clinic for an extended period of time, what you see is that every case is different, and every case requires not just a different essential oil or a different herb. Many times it requires a completely different treatment modality. So there are a lot of conditions that are treated best with just warm oil massage. There are some conditions, like respiratory conditions, that are treated really well with a steam bath, okay, a steam cabinet, some kind of steam treatment, as is found in certain spas. Okay, some conditions are treated best with acupuncture. Some conditions are treated best with shiradara. Some conditions are treated best with herbs, and some conditions are treated best with essential oils. Some conditions are treated best with a specific combination. And so let's get out of the box of thinking that essential oils are the answer to everything. And let's really be more holistic about it and put essential oils into the right place for treating the right thing. Now, what's very interesting about essential oils, and this is why I gave you all the information last week about epidemics, is number one, they are extremely antimicrobial. The challenge, of course, is what to do with that, as I unpacked last week, that just because it is antimicrobial in a petri dish does not mean that it will do the same thing in the body, and that is a big problem that people are having, because you just can't consume essential oils internally without the risk of hurting yourself in order to get the proper dose of the essential oil in the bloodstream to go to the tissues and organs. This is what is a very interesting big subject of research, because we know that we are at the end of the antibiotic era, and drug resistance is increasing and will be very, very serious in a very short period of time. It already is. And so knowing that essential oils have very potent antimicrobial powers is a good starting point. And there are things we can do safely with them. And some of this has already been presented, how to use essential oils safely. And using essential oils will reduce atmospheric airborne contagion of pathogenic microbes. We do know that. And so that's a good starting point for what to do with that antimicrobial power of the essential oils. Another very strong aspect of essential oils is that they are diffused into the atmosphere or inhaled in some various form, and therefore they obviously have a direct relationship on treating respiratory conditions. Okay, so if we put those two things together, we see that essential oils are a major treatment for respiratory conditions, especially of some type of microbial cause. And as we will see as we unpack this, it's not just the microbes. The essential oils also have a nicely stimulating and enhancing effect on our respiratory mucous membrane immunology, and they also help to balance the terrain. Thank you, John, for that question. So in this particular subject, in this particular case of using essential oils for the respiratory system, I would say that without a doubt, essential oils and aromatherapy are the first line of defense. Okay, now I will not say that about many other conditions. And people ask me many times, what is the essential oil for lowering blood pressure? Well, there isn't a good one. Maybe in conjunction with massage, the relaxing oils can help to indirectly work on that. But it's not a primary treatment. It's a secondary adjunct treatment, okay? Or people will say, what is the major essential oil for regulating my blood sugar and taking care of my diabetes? Well, there isn't any, okay? That's an herbal problem addressing a deep metabolic disorder that requires not just herbs, but actually a very holistic approach. So that's something to consider. I know a lot of people have already been asking me these types of questions. I wanted to clarify it for everyone. But what I will say is that now that we're talking about the respiratory system, we are definitely in the area where essential oils are the primary treatment. And I will go so far as to say that essential oils and aromatherapy, in the case of almost every respiratory condition, is beneficial. And that in the case of many, many common upper respiratory infections, it's the number one treatment. It's really the most important thing. And why is that important? Because there is still an epidemic of doctors prescribing antibiotics for upper respiratory viral infections. And that's one of the reasons that antibiotic resistance has grown so much. And in clinical practice, I treated so many cases, thousands of cases of people who had been on antibiotics repeatedly for years, if not decades, because an initial respiratory infection had never really been fully resolved and their immune system had been damaged by the antibiotics and they were susceptible to a reinfection, several times a year, and they would take antibiotics 2-3 times a year, and this had been going on for decades. And by then, intestinal health was severely compromised, irritable bowel syndrome had developed, or worse, for women, hormonal disturbances. And all of that went back to something very simple, usually in childhood, that if we knew how to treat it correctly the first time, that it could have been avoided. And then furthermore, and the reason that I say the essential oils are so effective for this kind of thing is because under those circumstances, just starting a regimen of herbs to boost the immune system, taking care of the diet, but especially using the essential oils for aromatherapy purposes and all the different ways you already know, would break the pattern of colds and flus happening so many times a year. So we know that there is some immune-enhancing benefit. So we can then sum this up and say, well, why are essential oils so effective for respiratory problems? First, we know they purify the microbes in the atmosphere, and we know that from research also, okay? Some of the research that you've already seen, they know that the microbes are susceptible to essential oils just in a diffuser, okay? And so we know that essential oils are very good for treating the pathogens before they get us, okay? And second, they come in contact directly with the microbes in the respiratory system as well as working on the mucous membranes. Okay? Again, this is very different than treating an internal situation. Essential oils may have in vitro powers against something like Lyme's, but that doesn't mean that we know how to get it into the blood in a way that is safe to treat the spirochete. So let's just assume then that we are using essential oils for the atmosphere. And the atmosphere includes the space of the respiratory system, okay, because the thoracic cavity is space, and it is connected directly to the space of our environment. And so therefore, when we turn on the diffuser, we can visualize that the essential oil micro droplets are not only filling up the room, but they're starting to fill up our respiratory system as well. And therefore, the micro droplets of essential oils are coming in direct contact with the microbes. All right, a few things to say about this. One of the things that research has found is that the vaporized oils are generally more effective than pure liquid form. This is very interesting. This goes back to why the plants produce the essential oils and how they protect themselves with them. And that is that the plants basically have an aura, a diffuse aura, of essential oils around them. And then, of course, if certain creatures are chewing on them, they don't taste good and burn their mouth. Okay, so the idea here is that we don't have to actually use strong concentrations to get really good effects. And so the idea is less is more, and vaporized is highly effective for the microbes. And here's a couple more points, that one of the most effective ways of treating respiratory infections is to inhale higher concentrations for a shorter period of time, okay? And that's something that I will unpack here with some specific recipes, but an obvious example of that would be the method you already know, which is to put a few drops of essential oil on a pot of hot water, cover your head with a towel and breathe it, keeping your eyes closed, of course. And that's what I mean by a higher dose for a shorter period of time. That appears to be one of the best ways of treating infections in the lungs, okay? But on the other hand, if you want to have more power of actually expectorating, to get the mucolytic, mucus-clearing effects, and this goes directly to the question of regulating the terrain, then lower concentrations tend to be more helpful. And what does that mean? Lower concentrations mean in a diffuser, okay? So there's a basic point that's very important to remember here. Diffused essential oils tend to work more effectively than pure liquid form, and this is especially true in respiratory conditions because you can't really use pure liquid essential oils in your lungs, okay? But giving yourself a direct blast of aromatic steam is your first choice for infection, but then to actually expectorate and clear the lungs, having something in the diffuser is going to work more effectively. So what can we translate from that? We can say that a longer, more chronic exposure to a lower dose of essential oils works on the mucous membrane terrain. A stronger concentration attacks the pathogens. All right, I hope that's helpful. Now, the next thing that we would like to do is talk about three terms in two different contexts. And here we're going to talk about vata, pitta, kapha. We're going to circle back around, and I'm going to give you another way of thinking about essential oils through the lens of Ayurvedic medicine. And this is very closely related to three basic functions known about essential oils. And that is antibiotic, probiotic, and eubiotic. I will say those terms again. You know antibiotic. That means it will kill bacteria specifically. Probiotic, it means it will support bacteria, the healthy bacterial culture. Eubiotic, and that's eubiotic, means that it will support a healthy terrain. What is a terrain? A terrain means the soil of a tissue or an organ, okay? It's the ground that the physiological events take place in. And so what is the terrain of the respiratory system? The terrain, the ground of the respiratory system is the mucous membrane. So that means if we take this antibiotic, probiotic, and eubiotic concept, and we also compare it with vata, pitta, kapha, we learn a tremendous amount about how the essential oils work, and then there is nothing left to do except just give you a whole bunch of recipes, Now, let's start with the Vata Pitta Kapha part, okay, because this will help us as we go through the therapeutics to understand different groups of oils. Because some oils may be much more effective for kapha, the mucous membranes, mucous congestion, and some oils may be much more effective for the pitta, attacking the infection and the inflammation, and some methods, such as steam inhalation, may be better for a dry respiratory system, okay? What's interesting about essential oils is that because they are inhaled as opposed to taking them orally, which is how we take herbs, they bypass our digestive system. Now, when we take herbs, we consume them orally. They first have to be processed in the stomach and then assimilated through the intestines and then processed by the liver and spread through the bloodstream through the various tissues and organs. In other words, it's a slow metabolic digestive process that affects the whole body. Well, if we're breathing essential oils, they're going directly into the lungs. And as we're going to find in a couple more modules, they go directly into the brain. And therefore, the way that they work is very different than the way that herbs work, which have to be processed through all the different digestive organs. Now, when it comes to taking herbs, in Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, there's a tremendous emphasis on if this herb is heating or cooling or drying or moistening, okay? In other words, what effect does it have on organs and tissues? What is its energy? What is its temperature? Okay, and so forth. Now, the interesting thing about essential oils is that that system can also be applied, but it doesn't matter so much. Why do I say that? Well, because in herbal medicine, you can say that an herb is moistening, and that may be the most important thing about it, okay? It may be hydrating, but that also means that it might be hard to digest and heavy and give you gas and bloating in your stomach and so forth. But when it comes to the essential oils, we can definitely say, okay, this oil is more cooling, all right? This oil is more heating. There are some real clear examples of that, but the majority of essential oils are more difficult to classify according to heating and cooling and so forth. What this means on a practical level is that essential oils are more tridoshic. In other words, they're good for the different doshas, doshas meaning vata, pitta, and kapha, okay? What this means is that we do not have to have the same level of medical expertise in order to get good benefits using generalized aromatherapy. So for example, in Chinese medicine, a respiratory condition of, say, airborne pathogen of an upper respiratory condition would be classified as wind heat, wind cold, wind phlegm, all right? And so what does that mean? That means basically upper respiratory viral infection is called attack by wind, and it can manifest as heat. What does that look like? More fever, more yellow-colored phlegm. More cold means more chills, more clear phlegm, clear mucus. More phlegm, that's a damper condition, okay? Now, let's just take any of the respiratory oils that you already know about, such as eucalyptus and conifers. Do we need to worry about whether eucalyptus and conifers are heating or cooling when it comes to identifying specifically should they be used for wind heat or wind cold? The answer is no. You don't actually have to make that distinction. Are eucalyptus oils heating or cooling? Well, yes. Mostly they're a little bit on the cooling side, and some are more cooling than others. But can you use that for a wind-cold condition? Yes. Why? Because the qualities of aromatic expectorant antimicrobial powers are more important than the cooling nature of the eucalyptus oil, okay? So what this means basically is that aromatherapy is actually more applicable for all body types without having to worry about whether you are a vata, pitta, or kapha person, or even worse, that you are a mixture of vata and pitta, or pitta and kapha, and whatever. This means you don't need a specific diagnosis. You can treat things symptomatically with aromatherapy very effectively. That means that essential oils are really good for the home pharmacy. Okay, now we can also go through and unpack and classify the essential oils according to the doshas, and we have already done that to some degree. That's something you saw last week in the file, where you saw a group of oils that are primarily expectorant. Well, what do you think expectorant relates to? It means getting rid of the kapha. So the expectorants are anti-kapha. Then you see a group of oils that are more anti-inflammatory. Well, what does that mean? That means that they are more anti-pitta. Okay, so we are approaching this from the standpoint of therapeutic functions, but it can very easily be translated into the three doshas. And so now we will talk about the conditions of the mucous membrane. Basically, there's four conditions, and this will help you to connect the dots between the therapeutic categories. The first condition is basically balanced, okay? Balanced and healthy. That means the vata pitta kapha of the mucous membrane is strong, good immune system, you know, symptoms and so forth. Now, let's say vata. What does vata look like? Well, vata is dryness. What does inflammation look like? What does pitta look like? It's inflammation. And what does kapha look like? It is congestion. Okay, so there is the simple way to understand the three doshas of the respiratory mucous membrane. Vata, dehydration, pitta, inflammation, kapha, congestion. And from that, we can now look at the different groups of the essential oils and classify it. So with vata, dehydration, the first thing we think about is essential oils can be drying, okay? So we want to put them in a water base and we want to hydrate. And we would think of steam and also some of the balsamic oils. You remember that balsamic means that it's very soothing to the mucous membrane. And so something like frankincense is balsamic. You would also think, number one, demulcent herbs, okay? And as we go through this section, I'm going to be also giving you a few ideas in terms of using herbs, because essential oils just can't do everything for the mucous membranes. And one of the things they cannot do very well is to hydrate. So what would you like? If there's a lot of dryness in the mucous membranes, you would like to think about taking a little tincture of licorice, which is moistening to the mucous membranes of the lungs. You will find in cough syrups, and we're going to be talking about that shortly, that they're frequently based on honey, which is very soothing to the dryness of the lungs and the throat. And we'll also frequently see that there are herbs like marshmallow. Well, what happens if you cook marshmallow root? You basically end up with jello and any kind of mucilaginous substance like that, or slippery elm bark. These types of things are very good for hydrating the lungs' mucous membrane when it's dry. So in vata conditions where there's a lot of dryness, we think of steam treatment, we think of balsamic oils, we think of demulcent herbs. And a very good example of this, those of you who took the Ayurvedic aromatherapy course saw pictures of an Ayurvedic steam cabinet where they basically put the person inside this giant wooden cabinet and the steam is coming out through these holes in the bench, and they fill the cabinet underneath with fresh herbs. And so you are basically being cooked in herbal steam. You are being sauteed in herbal steam, and that is very moistening to the body. So what is the best treatment then for the pitta side of things, inflammation? Well, those are the anti-inflammatory herbs. And paradoxically, it is also some of the strong antimicrobial herbs and oils. But some of those, paradoxically, are very heating. So that's a more complicated subject. We'll unpack that as we go. But we also look at the various kinds of herbs. Okay, so for example, what are some real classic cooling herbs for inflammation of the lungs? Well, for respiratory conditions, one of the first things we think about is the combination of golden seal and echinacea. And you probably know that. You know that if you are getting the early stages of an upper respiratory viral infection, if you take repeated doses of echinacea, you know, a dropperful in some water every hour or two, that what it will do is it will basically strongly stimulate the white blood cell activity of your body, and it can reduce the intensity and the length of the upper respiratory infection. And then if you take the tincture of the golden seal along with it, which is very cold and very bitter, that is appropriate if the infection goes a little bit deeper and becomes a little bit more of a congested yellow phlegm situation. Now, what about the CASA, the congestion part? This is best with decongestant and expectorant oils and herbs. And this is something that, you know, you have a very extensive list, and I mentioned last week that because there's common agreement that so many oils have expectorant functions, that what we saw was that essential oils are actually one of the best approaches for expectoration, okay? But then we also see that there's a lot of different herbs that are very good for that as well. So a lot of the anti-kapha herbs we're going to actually be addressing in the next module, which is on essential oils and digestion. And there's actually a lot less information that we can find about using essential oils and digestion for digestive purposes, because we can't take the essential oils internally. We can use the aromatic plants. And so basically what you see then is the warming aromatic plants that are expectorant can be taken internally as tea. What is that? Well, ginger tea, that's a perfect example of an anti-kapha type of herb that can be combined with your treatment of expectorant warming oils. And then what can you do? Well, you could do a ginger compress, okay? The ginger compress will also put essential oils in through the skin, and you drink the ginger tea, and as you'll learn in a few minutes here, ginger oil could also be used. And then what about other warming expectorant aromatics? How about tulsi? Okay, rosemary. These can all be taken as herbs very nicely to support the anti-kapha process, okay, the expectoration of the congestion. Now, let's talk briefly about the antibiotic, probiotic, and eubiotic issue. Now, we know that essential oils are antibiotic. How do we know that? Well, there's countless studies that show in a petri dish that petri oil, that lavender, many, many essential oils will inhibit at certain concentrations methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. That's what MRSA stands for. Okay, so we know that they're antibiotic, significantly antibiotic. Then at higher concentrations, they will not only inhibit, they will eradicate. But the concentrations, as I have mentioned last week, I talked about this a bit, the concentrations are actually ridiculously low, 0.5%, for example, of tea tree oil. That's 99.5% water, okay, will inhibit, and then at slightly higher doses, will eradicate MRSA in a petri dish. Now, that's phenomenal, but the point is that we know that essential oils have antibacterial, meaning antibiotic powers. But essential oils are also known as probiotic, meaning that they support the healthy terrain. I'm sorry, the healthy bacterial ecology in the terrain. Now, a question frequently comes. If you take essential oils internally, will it damage the healthy bacteria? Well, yes. But it's almost an irrelevant question, and I'm sure you know why. Because if you took so much essential oil to damage the healthy bacterial culture of your lower intestine, you would seriously damage the upper digestive tract first, okay? So in order to get that much essential oil into you, you're going to have to basically burn the mouth and the esophagus and the stomach. Now, there are some people who have made the claim that just smelling essential oils will damage your healthy bacterial ecology. I don't think so. I don't think there's any proof of that. I don't think there's any evidence of it. One of the treatment methods that we will talk about for the digestive system is actually how smelling essential oils stimulates your appetite. I think it's probably good for your healthy bacterial culture. But We also know that something happens through chronic use of essential oils, and that is that the mucous membrane terrain of the respiratory system becomes healthier. And so that is eubiotic. Eubiotic means that the Vata Pitta Kapha are balanced, the immune function of the respiratory terrain is now in a healthy state. The terrain is not congested with kapha, it is not inflamed with pitta, and is not dehydrated with vata. Therefore, we know that they are eubiotic, because we can see it. Okay, that's the end result of using essential oils and aromatherapy for the respiratory system, is we see that the mucous membrane terrain is benefited. So that part is purely empirical. That is something that has been seen for thousands of years by people who have used aromatic plants, that when you use these aromatic plants in different ways, that the respiratory mucous membrane gets healthy. Now, if it's healthy, that means, that implies, that the bacterial ecology is also healthy, because if it were not, the terrain would not be healthy. Therefore, we can assume and deduct that in order for the terrain to be balanced, that the essential oils must be supporting the healthy bacterial ecology under the proper conditions of the proper treatment. Therefore, we can say that essential oils are antibiotic, first of all, because they attack the pathogen. They're eubiotic because that's what we see happens. And they are probiotic because in order for the mucous membrane to be healthy, the bacterial ecology has to be strengthened. Okay, this is something that is very important to understand as a concept. And now we can talk for a few minutes about aromatherapy for immune enhancement, because when we talk about the specific recipes, one of the things that we will do is first give treatment recipes. So here's the recipe. You're going to treat a cold. Here's a recipe you're going to treat asthma. Here's a recipe you're going to treat bronchitis. Great. Those are symptomatic recipes. Then what? Well, one of the things that we would like to accomplish is we would like to break any pattern of repeated respiratory illness. And I know that this is a very common problem, that people have low immunity at the respiratory level. And that low immunity is basically causing the repeat of the infection, the susceptibility. Now, there are two possible scenarios with essential oils that I would like to mention here. You already know one of them that I have talked about repeatedly. There are many reports of adverse reactions from misuse of essential oils. And that includes chronic exposure to essential oils, okay? So people who use essential oils too much can become sensitized to them. This can happen, for example, in the case of massage therapists who have been doing massage for decades and their hands are always covered with oil, carrier oils, and different kinds of blends. And many times, what causes the sensitization, which can be severe sometimes, it's not the pure botanical essential oils. It's actually the rancid carrier oil that can do it, okay? Keep in mind that people can get skin reactions to just olive oil, okay, if it's not healthy. And so a lot of massage products, actually, they're manufactured in bulk. They're not that fresh. They have a lot of synthetics in them. And so massage therapists have somewhat of an occupational hazard if they're dealing with a lot of ingredients all the time on their skin, that they can become sensitized to chronic exposure. But again, pure essential oils will tend to do that less. Now, on the other hand, there are many, many reports of improved immune function after using aromatherapy for periods of time, okay? And when it comes to the respiratory system, one of the best testimonials that I can tell you about that I've heard over and over again, very simple. People say, I used to get a lot of colds and flus. Well, what made the difference? They used essential oils in a diffuser. And just by having low-grade exposure, it helped to balance the respiratory mucous membrane immunity, okay? And so we can understand then that low-grade chronic exposure using a diffuser will have a tendency to have the antimicrobial powers, first in the atmosphere, second in the mucous membrane. It will tend to balance the mucous membranes by reducing the Pitta inflammation and clearing the cough of congestion and so forth. And that will have a tendency then to support the healthy bacterial culture. Keep in mind that the healthy bacterial culture is really the secondary effect of the quality of the terrain. All right. So what we are seeing then, as we unpack this a step at a time, is that essential oils, done correctly, can actually strengthen our mucous membrane terrain, and that can lead to enhanced immune power. There's another aspect of aromatherapy and immune enhancement that is very important to consider, and that is that it's not just the antimicrobial, the antibiotic, eubiotic, and probiotic actions. That's one level that's working directly at the respiratory mucous membrane. But there's also the level, and this is what we're going to unpack in the modules, where we're looking at aromatherapy for emotional well-being. And that is the other major route of administration. When we are breathing the essential oils, they're going directly into our lungs. Therefore, we're getting direct benefit. But they're also going directly into our brain. And they will pass through the olfactory epithelium in the sinus cavity. They will be transformed. The impulse of the aromatic molecule will stimulate the receptor site, which will be transformed into a nerve current that will pass through the olfactory bulb, which is part of the limbic system. And then it will move into the structures of the limbic system. And from there, it will spread through different parts of the brain, including the endocrine system. What is the end result? Well, people generally feel mood upliftment, antidepressant effect, and relaxant, anxiolytic effects. What does that mean? Immune enhancement. Okay, so immune enhancement comes not just from inhaling the oils from a diffuser into the lungs. Immune enhancement also comes from the relaxing effect, from the mood enhancing effect. All right. Now, we're going to start recipes here. And for a lot of these recipes, I'm going to be giving numbers and discussing some blending and so forth. I encourage you to take notes. And I encourage you to listen to the audio, and I encourage you to read the transcripts. Because, really, this is something that is best done in a live audience where I can actually demonstrate, okay, now you take the pipette, you put it in the bottle, and so forth, but we can't do that. So, this will be an exercise in group visualization all over the world of how we're going to do this. Now, a lot of this is just lists of oils anyway. And we're going to skip back and forth between some of these recipes and the monographs from this week and last week. And we're going to first look at major groups of oils for specific things and then look in more detail at a specific oil. So let's start by looking first at some basic oils that are beneficial for the respiratory system, but also have a relaxing effect. Well, that list is quite long. Now, why do we want to basically soothe the anxiety when we're treating respiratory conditions? Well, because respiratory conditions naturally generate anxiety, and anxiety worsens respiratory conditions. So here, we can see that the eucalyptus oils in particular are very nice. Okay, they have that dual function because eucalyptus is also uplifting and clarifying to our mind and emotions. Okay, frankincense will also do this, but any of the flower oils, all right? So here we can just review the broader therapeutic categories that we talked about in Module 3. So eucalyptus, what does that mean? Any of the conifer trees, the eucalyptus trees, that are in the broader therapeutic category of respiratory oils. Okay, these will be very helpful for soothing anxiety and helping to open the lungs. Most of the things in the sacred scents category, such as frankincense and Palo Santo and so forth, will also have a significant anxiolytic calmative kind of effect. You see, so we're starting to see that there's so many oils that will do so many things, and that's a problem because some people would like to know a specific oil. But really, aromatherapy is more holistic, okay? There are many, many choices that we have here. There are oils that have very specific functions, but a lot of oils have very generalized functions. That's also a good thing about aromatherapy. Now, the next broad category would be the flower oils, okay? So many of the flower oils will help to soothe anxiety, but lavender is a good one that is really specific for the lungs. And we also see that ylang ylang, but I would say that many of the flower oils, and the citrus oils can do this also, and the pine oils, which are in the conifer department. Okay, so that's how we start, is let's just remember that if the respiratory condition is strongly associated with anxiety, we pick the oils that have a known calmative effect that also overlap with having respiratory benefits, and those are a few, okay? Now, let's just look at generalized cough, okay? Now, that could be for all kinds of different things, and I'm going to give you here shortly treatment for nicotine withdrawal. So obviously, smokers are going to have cough, or cough could just be the remnant of a previous infection. Maybe you had bronchitis while you were traveling in India, and you came back, you don't really have bronchitis, but it just hasn't totally cleared up. There could be a lot of different causes of cough, but in this particular case, we're just going to treat them somewhat generally. And so what would you imagine? Here, we start with, again, the basic group of oils, and then we add specific oils from the different therapeutic categories. This is a principle that I introduced last week. Now, let's just go through the different core oils, the most fundamental oils, that are known to be very beneficial for coughing. The eucalyptus oils and the conifer oils. Imagine that. Here's another one. Rosemary has a specific effect for coughing. The mint oils can also be very good for coughing, but I'm going to give a caution here, and I've given it before, and I'm going to repeat this. Many of the mint oils are very problematic for people. There are some compounds in the mint oils that can actually give people headaches and other central nervous system toxic reactions. And the mint oils can be very, very challenging on the skin. Okay, they can be very dermatoxic. So mint oil, I don't really encourage it, but you're going to get a couple of recipes here where there's very low dilution of peppermint and spearmint. Mints in general, in my opinion, should be taken as tea, supportive, okay? So cough is there, drink the peppermint tea. Frankincense is also very good for coughing, and in my opinion, the frankincense oils, the different species, are better in the diffuser and steam. They can be very powerful in the steam, so don't breathe them too directly at first, keep your eyes closed. And this is cleaner, a cleaner way of doing it in a diffuser than burning the resin, because with the resin, you do get the soot, okay? But that was used also classically. That was used in fumigation for respiratory conditions as well. Citruses, especially the lemon, can be helpful, and then the Tulsi essential oil. And the Tulsi essential oil is very, very high in eugenol, the compound that makes cloves smell and taste like cloves, very dermotoxic, and so this would be one of the essential oils that is good for cough. It is a very good oil for cough in proper dilutions. Very dermotoxic. Use it in very low concentrations. Use it primarily in the diffuser. And think of this as a primary herb that you should take as tea instead. Same with the next one, which is ginger. So ginger essential oil can be used safely in aromatherapy applications, such as a chest rub, compress on the chest that we'll talk about here in a moment. But ginger is also one of the first choices to take as a tea. Okay, so here you already are seeing that any recommendation for aromatherapy can be translated right away into herbal medicine. So what have I said? Coughing. What have I recommended? Make some hot, fresh ginger tea. Put some fresh tulsi leaves in that and let it steep. Add a little bit of peppermint. Let it steep. Okay? That way you get the aromatic benefits without running any risk of overheating, burning the skin. Or do both. It's okay. As long as everything is fully diluted, it's really okay. Another one that's very good for the respiratory system for coughing is Palo Santo. One of my favorites, since I was directly responsible, Sarah and I were directly responsible for bringing Palo Santo to the United States early on, many years ago, and we have a nice personal connection with the distiller and the tree in Ecuador. And so Palo Santo is used in classical ethnobotanical medicine, specifically for the respiratory system. Pinyon pine, something that I'm also very pleased with historically, because a friend of mine basically decided to start distilling it, and as a result, the world now has pinyon pine because he was inspired by one of my presentations. And then we have rosemary. Okay, so these are the things that are, I'm sorry, I already gave you rosemary earlier. Okay, so these are the things that you would think of first for cough. Now, cough means antitussive. Okay, and so I gave you a list last week of some other things, okay? Many of those things are in this list here. The pinyon pine and the rosemary and the tulsi and the frankincense and the eucalyptus, but there's a couple other things that you could also consider. Now, let's make a simple blend out of that, okay? So what would you like to do? How about taking equal parts of eucalyptus and silver fir and pinyon pine. Okay, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. What would I do? Okay, three oils together. What are you going to do? You're going to get your disposable plastic pipette. You're going to put it in a bottle of one of those oils, and you're going to pull out a half a pipette. Okay, you're going to put that into your blending jar. Now, you're going to put that pipette next to that oil that you just took it out of. You're not going to use that pipette for the next oil. That's a very important thing here. Keep your pipettes separated. You don't have to throw them out. Just keep them with the bottle. And then take a fresh pipette and put it in the next oil. So what did I tell you? First oil is going to be eucalyptus. Next oil will be half a pipette of silver fir. Close the bottle, put the pipette down, get a new pipette, and put it into a bottle of pinyon pine, half a pipette. Okay, equal parts. These are all very similar. This is not advanced perfumery. And now you have a synergy or an accord. Okay, three essential oils together that are going to work nicely for one specific purpose. Okay, well, what are they working on? Well, this is for coughing in general. But they're going to be good for all kinds of respiratory things. Now, what's the next thing that you want to do? You want to have a label. You want to have a sticky label, and you want to write down what you just put in that jar because it's remarkably easy to forget. And so you want to write down half a pipette of eucalyptus, half a pipette of silver fir, half a pipette of pinyon pine. That's your synergy. Now, what would you like to do? Now is where it starts to get fun because you can start to add the oils that are going to address the specific condition according to whether you need something mucolytic and expectorant, in other words, kapha, or whether it's going to be anti-inflammatory, meaning pitta, or whether it's going to be soothing to the vata. All right, so let's just assume then that with a cough that there is phlegm. Now, kapha is a cold-natured condition with dampness, and therefore you are going to want more warming essential oils that are also expectorant and mucolytic. And so what are some of the basic ones? Well, on your file last week, and this is why I gave this to you, so you could start to become familiar with these groups of functions, and that reading the file will start to familiarize yourself with the personality of the oils, all right? So you look at mucolytic, all right? Well, that means basically that it liquefies, okay? And it makes the kapha more easily expectorated. And so what do you see, okay, mucolytic? What do you see with expectorant? You want to look specifically for the warming essential oils that are also mucolytic and expectorant, but they tend to be more warming, okay? And that's because you may want to make a differentiation between expectorating yellow phlegm versus clear phlegm, all right? We'll think in Chinese terms here. And so kapha is more clear, pitta is more yellow. Let's just look at kapha. We want warming things. So warming would be rosemary. Okay, rosemary is a good warming expectorant. Ginger is a nice warming expectorant. Okay, tulsi is a very hot expectorant. All right. What else? A black pepper. That's a warming expectorant. And then we also see that oregano. Okay, now oregano crosses over because it's not just a warming expectorant, it's also very strongly antimicrobial. And so you could use it in a situation where it's that kind of mixed hot and cold kind of situation. And you will also see myrtle is listed. That is more warming. And white sage is a bit warming also. Okay, so those were a few of the things that I would have picked out. And some of this is still open to translation and interpretation, okay, because it's very difficult to classify things in little boxes when it comes to comparing, say, the chemistry of an oil with an Ayurvedic concept. But that's a starting point. If you have an oil like black pepper, there's a fairly good justification that you could say that it's warm by nature. If you have an oil like ginger or oregano, which have a tendency to possibly burn the skin, or tulsi, which has eugenol that can burn the skin, you could make a pretty strong empirical case that these are warming types of oils that you would like to use in a kapha congestion kind of situation. Okay, now what would you like to do with that? Well, that will be the addition to your basic synergy. And let's just say that that's all you have going on. You just have a chronic cough with some clear kind of kapha congestion. Well, why don't you just put half a pipette of myrtle oil or tulsi oil in that. Close the bottle, put the pipette down next to it so you know where it goes, and write that on your label. Now you have a nice little blend for a kind of kapha expectorant cough. Now what about for pitta? Well, if you look at the oils in the list, you're going to look specifically for anti-inflammatory. Okay, now this again is somewhat of a challenge to translate, but it's also fairly easy to see certain oils and certain herbs that through empirical evidence are known anti-inflammatories. Like for example, chamomile is a known anti-inflammatory. And chamomile can then be added to your synergy to help cool the congestion in the cough, okay? So if the cough is more of a hot type, then you can add the anti-inflammatory oils. Chamomile is pretty concentrated. If I were blending this, I would say, well, maybe a quarter of a pipette. This is something that is open to experimentation. And when it comes to blending these kind of therapeutic blends, it does not have to be an olfactory masterpiece, okay? Because it's for therapeutic purposes, okay? It is not to try to find the perfect synergy of the most exotic, expensive, hard-to-find aromatic ingredients that are going to cause enlightenment. What you're trying to do here is basically just get the therapeutic actions of the oils into the same jar that you're then going to use somehow. So what are a couple other things that are anti-inflammatory for pitta? Well, peppermint. But again, what would I do with peppermint? All right, so you've got three half pipettes, okay? I believe the pipettes are 1 milliliter each. So what does that mean, a milliliter and a half? I would put one drop of peppermint. That's how conservative I am. But then Palo Santo, okay? Maybe half a pipette would be good. Pinyon pine is also, it crosses over from many different categories, okay? And frankincense is actually anti-pitta also. So chamomile, frankincense, what about the flowers? Those are known anti-inflammatory. So how about lavender? Put lavender in there because lavender is also antimicrobial, anti-infectious. That's a nice one. And then if cost is no object, you could put a few drops of helichrysum in there because helichrysum is also a very, very effective and famous anti-inflammatory. Okay, now what about the vata? Well, vata, you know you're basically going to want to apply this in steam, but ginger is a very good anti-vata oil. And so is frankincense, and so is Palo Santo and sandalwood. And eucalyptus is very nice also. So now you have your blend, okay? You've got at least three oils. You've added a couple of things from the category that's going to be most helpful for treating the dosha, the inflammation, the congestion, or the dryness. Now what do you do with it? Well, there's all kinds of things. You can diffuse it. You can just take that blend and put it in your diffuser. And that's the safest way, of course. Now, what about a shower inhalation? Okay, well, that depends on whether you have used oils that have low dermotoxic potential or not. Okay, now, eucalyptus and conifers, as you know from Module 3, have low dermotoxic potential. The flowers have low dermotoxic potential. But what if you have added oregano? Well, you may find that rubbing oregano oil, even in a blend like that, on your chest in the shower might cause some unpleasant sensations, not just on your chest, but all the way down the front of your body, okay? So this is where you need to connect dots about what I have told you previously, and you need to use the oil safely. Now, can you use the dermotoxic oils in a diffuser? Yes. So if you added a bunch of tulsi and you added a bunch of oregano and you added a bunch of black pepper, okay, a strongly anti-kapha heating type of blend, are you going to rub it on your skin? No. You're going to put it in the diffuser, okay? It might be okay to put a couple of drops on the palm of your hand, rub them together, and breathe it. Just keep it out of your eyes. Keep it away from the skin of your face. Now, you could do something more with this particular blend. You could make a chest rub. You could put it into a massage oil. And by diluting it further, you will be reducing the risk of too high a concentration directly on the skin. So now I'm going to give you another recipe. And this is basically how you can make a salve, okay? It's a very simple thing, and there's countless recipes available. I'm not going to spend a lot of time giving you a lot of these recipes because they're so easy to find online, and there's a lot of different ways of making them out of a lot of different ingredients, and the ones that I will give you are going to be just the easiest, most basic things that you can do just listening to me and reading the transcripts, okay? So you'll take a type of thicker butter. How about cocoa butter? Or how about shea butter? Okay, now there's all kinds of new butters that are coming out from all kinds of exotic sources in the Amazon and so forth. Just take 2 ounces, okay? And now we are confronted, well, what does 2 ounces mean, all right? Well, you can buy it, and it's going to tell you what size that jar is, all right? So you could buy a 2-ounce jar. That's the easiest solution. Or you could add to your blending equipment wide-mouth 2-ounce jars, okay? So when we get into blending further, it's always nice to have a collection of a half an ounce and a 1 ounce and a 2 ounce and a 4 ounce. And in general, we want wide mouth for blending purposes. Okay. And so you take a wide mouth jar and you're going to take 2 ounces of the cocoa butter or the shea butter and you're going to just warm it up. OK, Okay, you're just going to put it in a pot. You don't want to scald it. Typically, a double boiler works nicely, so you get a nice, soft, even heat over it. Then, if you would like to make this a little bit more therapeutic, and especially for the lymphatic system, all right, an oil like castor oil could work. But you could actually use a number of the carrier oils. You could look over the list of carrier oils, and you will see that they have different kinds of effects. But castor oil is a really good one for detoxification. And so you take a little, you take the 2 ounces of the butter, shea butter, cocoa butter, whatever, put it in the double boiler, 1/2 ounce of castor oil. Okay, so let's translate that into parts. Okay, so 2 ounces and 1/2 ounce, that means that 1/2 ounce is 1 part, 2 ounces is 4 parts. Now, you can multiply that and make it into gallons if you want. So just warm it softly, stir it around, okay? Then you would like to add your essential oils, okay? How many essential oils would you like to put in? Well, you can make whatever blend you want. That's not what's important. What's important is how much of the blend do you put in. So now you have 2.5 ounces. Let's look back at the proper use of essential oils. You can do this at a later time. By now you should be familiar with some of the percentages, okay? So we're looking at proper dilutions to go in a massage oil or to go in a salve such as this. And what we see is that 1% is 6 drops per ounce, okay? Now, a safe dilution of most of the respiratory oils will be somewhere between 2% and 3%, okay? So you can actually make this a little bit on the stronger side. But let's just say, all right, you've got 6 drops per ounce, and you've got basically 2.5 ounces. You see, this is where all the math comes in. That means that minimum, for the lightest dilution, you can very safely put in about 12 to 15 drops, okay? And maximum, let's keep it at 2%, okay? So maximum, 12 drops in an ounce, that's 24 drops in 2 ounces, and you could add 6 more for that extra 1/2 ounce, okay? So 30 drops in 2.5 ounces. That's how we learn how to make these various preparations. And I hope you find this helpful because there's lots and lots of recipes that we will get into. We're obviously not going to finish all these recipes or even all these respiratory conditions because we still have so many to go, but that's okay because it's really all right to overlap a bit into the digestive stuff since the digestive use is much more limited. Now, what are you going to do with that? Well, put the essential oils and let it cool. Put it in, you know, pour the base into the wide mouth jar, add your drops of oil, and you have now your synergy of core oils, and you have added supporting oils. So, in other words, the core oils would be called in herbal medicine the chief herbs, okay, the primary herbs, and then you're adding your adjunct herbs. And then you have a holistic blend. And then what you're going to do is put the drops into either a carrier oil. You don't have to make the salve. You can just put this into almond oil. You can just put it into coconut oil. You can put it into anything. It's the proportions that matter. What do you do next? Rub it on your chest. You can also use this kind of approach for sore throats, okay? And as we go, I'll give you a few other recipes, but something for, you know, swollen glands and sore throat, you might like to add something like more lavender or more pinyon pine. You increase the amount of that, okay? So this can be very helpful then symptomatically for coughing with different kinds of vata, pitta, kapha kinds of congestion. Okay, now, let's talk about cough syrups. And right towards the end of class, I am now going to talk about something that apparently contradicts everything I've said up to now, which is don't take essential oils internally. But when I get done explaining all of this, you're going to understand that I'm actually not contradicting myself. I am giving you another level of education about how this can be done. And why can this be done? Because it can be done under very specific circumstances. And what are those circumstances of taking essential oils internally? First of all, they are specific oils. Second of all, they are extremely dilute. Third of all, they are for a specific function, okay? And that is really what separates the use of essential oils internally as is being widely taught versus what you find in herbal medicine. And the best place where you can find some good recipes for safe use of essential oils for specific purposes, where they really get the best benefit, is in studying recipes for cough syrups. Okay, so cough syrups are typically a blend of honey and herbal extracts, and many times low dilutions of essential oils. All right, so let's unpack this paradox here a little bit. In a commercial preparation of a lot of natural cough syrups, you will find essential oils. Am I going to tell you don't take those cough syrups? No. I will tell you that the essential oils in those cough syrups, first of all, are essential oils that are relatively safe, and why they are relatively safe. And I'm going to tell you that they are in very low dilutions, and I'm going to tell you that they are for a specific effect where they really are outstanding. Essential oils in a cough syrup, or even just a base of honey, is outstanding for certain respiratory kinds of conditions. But here's the problem, and this is what makes this use very, very specific. And that is, anybody who has a complicated health condition knows that whenever you take a medication, whether it is a prescription medication or it is a natural approach, it can help one system but harm another. Therefore, if you are taking cough syrups that have herbs in them in low dilutions of certain essential oils, those essential oils will definitely help your respiratory system, but they could definitely aggravate your digestive system. Okay, now, this is a common herbal challenge because there's lots of herbs that people need that are hard on the digestive system. And so this is why getting people's digestion functioning correctly at first is absolutely necessary. And this is one of the great problems with a lot of prescription drugs, is that people get to a point where they can't keep taking them because their digestive system is so messed up, whether it's even just, you know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs for inflammation that has now caused gastritis, but at the same time they can't stop, okay? So when we're talking about herbal medicine, we always have to look at the length of time and the concentration. And so even just a commercial cough syrup, people know that if they take too many doses in a day for too many days, it'll start to bother their stomach. Well, why? Well, one of the first explanations is because it's got the essential oils in it. So when I am telling you about some of these formulas here, you must keep in mind that this is for a specific purpose for a very limited amount of time, and you must keep your eyes open. You must keep your inner eye open and your sensitivity open to listening to whether your stomach is starting to get irritated or not. Now, that's very different than somebody who has no medical education, no herbal experience, just telling you it's fine to drink 3 or 6 drops of frankincense oil on a glass of water several times a day for months. Okay? So that's why I am giving you all these criteria and the qualifications of when can these oils be done. So, first of all, let's look at a few of the oils that tend to be commonly found in commercial cough syrups. Eucalyptus oil is found. Thyme oil, anise, most of the aromatic herbs are there. Fennel oil, peppermint oil, pine oil. The respiratory herbs are there, eucalyptus and pine, and some of the citruses, like lemon also, okay? These are commonly found. Now, here's a very interesting and very, very important point. As you know from the discussion about quality control, there are many oils that have serious quality control issues. As the plant becomes more endangered and rare and the demand goes up, the tendency for adulteration of that oil increases. Now, here's one of the reasons that using these types of essential oils in preparations for the respiratory system is relatively safe. And that is, these oils are produced on the market in such large amounts that you are not going to have to be overly concerned about poisoning yourself with synthetic fragrant chemicals that show up in oils frequently, like rose oil and frankincense oil and sandalwood oil and many other oils that are highly adulterated. Eucalyptus oil is produced by tons and tons every year. Fennel oil, the same, and peppermint oil. Okay, so these kinds of oils then, I also can say there's a reason why they're relatively safe to use, and that is you're not going to poison yourself because it's a rare exotic oil that is stretched with some kind of petrochemical-derived fragrance molecule. Okay. Now, when we look at the formulas, we see that there's another reason that this is okay, and that is that the amount that you ingest is actually very, very low. Now, you could overly ingest these, but if you're talking about a commercial cough syrup preparation, the amount of essential oil you are going to get in a typical spoonful is going to be extremely dilute. Okay? That's, again, a criteria for why you can use it. So just to sum it up, the oils are low-risk oils in terms of quality control. The amount that you will take in a typical dose is a fraction of what you would take if you were just pouring essential oils by the drops into your cup. You're taking it for a specific condition where those oils really excel, and you also understand that there is the risk of overheating your digestive system just as there is with numerous other kinds of herbs. Okay, now I hope you found that that was an acceptable presentation on why I contradicted myself. Now, I'm just going to wrap this up here because we're running out of time, unfortunately, with some information that you can find easily. I just took a couple of products that are online, natural herbal cough syrups, okay? I just did a little research, and this is to give you recipes and to give you amounts, okay? And we'll conclude with a basic cough syrup formula and ratios. So here's a couple names, and I'm not endorsing these. These are just things, these are products that I know are widespread, commonly available natural cough syrups. Floradix, okay, a big European company. Well, I did the math, okay, and what we see is that they have parts, okay, these are milligrams. And what we see is that they have herbal extracts, which are typically tinctures, okay? So you have to consider that the alcohol presence in cough syrups is also a factor for overheating your digestive system. That's why anybody can tell you, if you take too much cough syrup, your stomach's going to burn. It's not just the essential oils, it's also the alcohol. Okay, so they have a recipe, and it's based on herbal extracts of thyme, licorice, okay, which is actually very soothing to the digestive tract and the lungs. Thyme is the antimicrobial expectorant. Chamomile is the anti-inflammatory. Lindenflowers, that's the calmative. Anise, that's one of the aromatic stimulants of the digestive system and an expectorant of the lungs. Caraway, well, that's an interesting addition. All the aromatic seeds are going to have respiratory benefits. Fennel, knotweed, okay, well, that's a specific herb. They have their own reasoning for putting that in there. What's important here is not the formula. What's important is that the total amount in the bottle comes to 178 milligrams. Right. Now, to that 178 milligrams, they add 14 milligrams of a total blend. That's for those of you who are really mathematically oriented. That blend is anise and fennel and eucalyptus and peppermint and pine and lemon. Again, anise and fennel, eucalyptus, peppermint, pine, and lemon. But it only comes to 14 milligrams. Okay, well, there's 77 milligrams of the thyme alone. Okay, so the total formula then comes to 192 milligrams. And if we do the math on it, what it turns out is that it, the essential oils comprise 7%. Okay, what does that mean? That means that a teaspoon of this cough syrup has 93% honey and herbs. All right. So that's the justification for low dilution. All right. So you're getting, whenever you take a spoonful of this particular formula, 93% of it is honey and herbs. Another little exercise here, another product from Old Boss. Okay, that's a well-known company from Europe also. And they do the same thing. What are the herbs? Thyme and licorice and plantain. Plantain is a wonderful herb for the lungs, okay? It's a weed that grows in your backyard. Horse chestnut. That's an interesting one. That's really used in herbal medicine, more for varicose veins and so forth. So it's an interesting herb to find there. And then pine, okay? Well, extract of pine, we imagine, has similar kinds of respiratory benefits. But what's the total amount? 444 milligrams. Then the blend of oils. Peppermint, eucalyptus, cajaput, which I would not recommend, juniper, which is fine, wintergreen, which I also wouldn't recommend, and clove, which is okay but a little problematic. This essential oil combination is a little more questionable in my mind, but look at the percentage. The total percentage of the essential oil blend is down to 2.3%. Okay? So in other words, one teaspoon contains more than 97% honey and herbs. So, what do we do with all of this? If you want to be really adventurous and you really need it, you can just put a drop of an essential oil, and you're probably not believing your ears. You can put one drop, maybe even two drops, mix it with a spoon of honey, okay, and take it that way. That's the simplest way to do it. But you must take oils that are not problematic in terms of quality control, and you must do it specifically for a respiratory condition, and you must do it understanding that it can burn your stomach. All right. Now, what would you like to do for a basic cough syrup formula before you quit here? How about 70% honey, 30% herbal blend in tincture form? Okay. That's a fairly simple, standard way of making a cough syrup. And so what are the herbs that you're going to put in tincture form? Let's hold off on that till next week, and all the herbs that I'm going to mention for all the other respiratory conditions. You could put those in tincture form into a base of honey. So now you're going to end up 70% honey, 30% tinctures. There's your cough syrup. Now, what would you like to do to add the essential oils? Well, let's just say you got 100% cough syrup formulated. 1 to 2% essential oil can be added to that. Okay? All right. There's a little math homework for you. I'll give you the answer next week. And unfortunately, we are out of time. And don't worry, because there's plenty of good information coming next week to continue with this. I'm going to delve into the common cold. I'm going to delve into bronchitis. I'm going to delve into sinusitis and asthma. We're going to cover a lot of things, smoking withdrawal and so forth. We still have a lot to go on the respiratory system. Sometimes we run late like that, and that's okay because there's a huge amount of information. And then sometimes we have the opportunity to make up because some of the other modules are a little shorter, like the digestive module. Okay, so Colleen, I'm going to turn it back to you, and we can see if anybody has been inspired by this module, has any particular questions. I hope they're not about math, or anybody now has any nice stories to tell or anything that they would like clarified before we wrap it up.
Okay, thank you so much, David. I just wanted to also remind everyone, if you're on the telephone on the Maestro system, please press 1 on your telephone keypad. And let's see. Now, I hope I get your name spelled, pronounced correctly. You said last week, and it's also a city in Canada, and Regina, and I know that's incorrect. It's Regina. Go ahead, Regina. You have the mic.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if it's permitted, but I have two questions, if possible. The first one is I have the Organic India Tulsi herb capsules.
Yes.
I was going to send them to my daughter, but she does have digestive problems. And I know this isn't specifically EO related, but I'm assuming there's a high percentage of essential oils in the cut and dried herbs in this capsule. Would you suggest that she just stick to Tulsi tea, or perhaps try the capsules and see what happens, or just forego them all altogether?
No, they're probably excellent. They'll probably help her. The difference is that the essential oil content in the fresh plant, the dried plant, is very, very low. And that's why it's always a good alternative to just take the aromatic herbs in tea form, powder form, as opposed to trying to use the essential oils internally. They're hundreds of times more concentrated. So you could do it either way. You could also tell her that start with one capsule with some liquid and see how it feels. Most likely it will feel fine. Most likely it will be beneficial for her. But she could also just empty the capsule out into a cup of hot water and drink it as a tea that way. That's also okay. My impression, Tulsi is very, very safe. In capsule form, powder form, and tea form, I wouldn't worry about it. It is a primary herb for treating all kinds of digestive problems, and that's why I'm giving the approval, even though I have no idea what she has. But even if it were inflammatory, most likely, it would have some positive benefit. So, yes, just tell her to start with one capsule, maybe once a day, and then go to one capsule twice a day like that, and most likely there will be nothing but benefit.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. My second question is, I've read in numerous books, especially the European aromatherapist books, that when you use essential oils, either in inhalation or massage, the essential oils get into your bloodstream and go directly to the specific organs or systems that need the healing and works from there. What's your experience or knowledge on that? Is that true or partially true or not true?
Well, I don't think that that would be proven through advanced testing. In other words, if we ingest something, it's going to be transformed and metabolized in different ways in different tissues and organs, and it's going to be a whole body physiological process. Okay, I don't think that modern science would say that these aromatic molecules have intelligence and know where to go. Okay, however, I do think that the body is extremely intelligent, and the molecules are also extremely intelligent. And so what does that mean? It means that when we ingest things that are beneficial and healing for us, that they tend to work on the areas that are damaged and need help, and that the scope of their activity is really focused in a specific place. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the compounds only go there. Let's take the example of turmeric for treating inflammation in the joints. Okay, now, if we use that theory, then it means that the curcumin compounds are assimilated through the digestive tract into the bloodstream, and the curcumin knows to go only to the joints. I don't think that's correct. As a matter of fact, I know it's not correct. What we can say is that the presence of curcumin in the body has a systemic anti-inflammatory effect. And the intelligence of the body then responds to that with a positive reaction in the areas where the inflammation is taking place. All right, so that's a little bit of a complicated answer, and it includes both a little science and also recognition that the plants are intelligent and the body is intelligent, because we absolutely cannot say that it is purely mechanistic. It is highly intelligent, but I don't think that the healing therapeutic powers come because the molecules only go one place, okay? I think that the healing powers come because the body works with the molecules, changes them into lots of other molecules. The molecules, in turn, have all kinds of effects on other tissues and organs, and the net effect is that the turmeric has had an anti-inflammatory benefit in the joints. How's that?
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. And I've been taking turmeric in fresh blended juices, the raw root, half an inch only.
Sure.
From the very first juice drink, it almost completely eradicated some joint pain I was having. Amazing.
Wonderful. Fabulous. Wonderful. Yes, it's a really, really great herb. Okay, and it will be one of the herbs that we will actually talk about in some of the other modules. For example, in the modules on musculoskeletal uses of essential oils, turmeric will be there. So thank you. Good questions, good comments.
Thank you
okay.
so much.
Oh, you are most welcome. And so now, unfortunately, our time is over. I'm always disappointed when the time rolls around so quickly. If you would, it's now time to look at our, well, I'm looking at all the things we didn't cover. Okay, we got plenty of stuff for next week. let's look very quickly at the deepening practices, okay? And this information that you got today was sufficient to get started with all your deepening practices. And let's just review these. Read all files and oil monographs, just like you do every week. Start using some of the respiratory oils in a diffuser, if you have not already, using only one oil at a time. And this is especially important if you have any issues with asthma. Okay, you might want to wait, actually, till next week, until we cover the entire topic of asthma, because people with asthma can react very badly to essential oils. We need to qualify it. Number three, if you find the specific oil is beneficial, try using it in a steam inhalation using only one oil. Use one oil of the respiratory oils with low dermotoxic risk in a shower or bath. So please, before you pour oils into the bath, review the proper dilutions. Before you rub them all over your chest in a shower, review which ones have low dermotoxic potential. This is given in previous modules. Number five, after you have become familiar with oils as single notes, make a simple synergy of two or three oils, as I described for you today. Use this in the diffuser, the bath, the steam inhalation, or application in oil or salve, as I described to you today. Number six, you can then graduate to a more complex formula using the method of first making the synergy, then adding additional oils from specific therapeutic categories, as I described last week and this week. Number seven, as you are using the oils a step at a time, notice their various effects. This is very important. Physically, mentally, and emotionally, discontinue if any irritation or adverse reactions develop. Number eight, if you have a respiratory condition, guess what? You can treat yourself. Use the appropriate oils and methods for self-care. So far, you can start with general cough, okay, and general relaxing to the lungs kind of approach. Next week, by the time we are done, you will have a full pharmacy of many recipes and a full understanding of treating a wide variety of respiratory conditions. So with that, I would encourage you to adjourn to the breakout groups where you can discuss these fascinating subjects with many very interesting people all over the world, and you can learn more from them, from their experiences of what to do and what not to do, and enjoy yourself further. And also, don't forget about the other resource, which is the social media that's available for you. And so with that, my time is up. And so I'm going to turn it back to you, Colleen. And Colleen, I'll say thank you once again for hosting this call. And I will say good night and thank you to everybody all over the world. Have a wonderful week exploring the aromatic benefits of these oils for your lungs. And there were many webcast questions that came in. Don't worry, they all get answered. I will post that file next week. And I will talk to you in 1 week. So thank you and good night.